You are tuned into Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media.
Now, for many with PTSD, trauma doesn't stay in the past, right? It replays like an uninvited movie in their minds. Flashbacks and nightmares can be overwhelming, but there are ways to manage them. And so today we're going to be discussing coping techniques to regain control. And Juan Roif joins us once again from the Vista Clinic. Good morning, Juan.
Hi, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing all right. Thank you so much for joining us once again. Have you had a good week?
I have. Busy, but good.
Good, good, good. Happy to hear that. All right, so let's get straight into this one. What triggers PTSD flashbacks and how do they feel?
You know, it's you can almost say anything, but to name a few: sights, sounds, smell, tastes, places, people associated with trauma experiences, mm-hmm. even anniversaries, stressors, you know, getting too much stress. And then even media, stories, movies sometimes, physical sensations even, such as touch or pain that resembles something that happened during a trauma. The unfortunate thing about them is that they don't always make sense. We can't, especially the people with PTSD, they can't always sort of figure out why did the other day I used a dry fire as an example. You know, why did that send me back to X?
Yeah.
Or why did that make me feel the way I did? Why did that trigger me? And it doesn't always make sense. But as I've mentioned before, they really are terrible. If you can imagine the most, in a nutshell, way I can describe it is, in your mind, you go back to whatever that smell or taste or whatever represented, yeah. whatever it's tying to. Sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes it's just a feeling of panic or terror. People will break out in a sweat, start trembling. Have all your sort of common anxiety features, shaking, sweating, mind is racing, those kind of things. For some people, they lose touch with reality, even if periodically. They can sometimes become unresponsive. Some people cry and scream and kind of try, and especially where the flashback is, as I say, taking the mind back to what was happening, they literally try and get away from it. I was thinking this morning, how can I describe it to you and the listeners? And the best way I can describe it is, and I'm sure everybody's had this, where you have a very, very vivid dream. Those dreams where you wake up and you are still fighting to get out of the pool that you fell in, if I can use mm-hmm. that as an example. Mm-hmm. Then you sort of gasp for breath. That's how real it was. That's pretty much what a trigger and a flashback can be like. It can be that real.
So it sounds like you really can't even control.
Yeah, very much so. You do lose control temporarily until you, for lack of a better way of explaining it, come back from wherever the mind took you. Mm. One of the things that I do want to add is, you know, people, I've said this before, but I really want to reiterate that it is a symptom. It is not a sign of weakness. And people shouldn't be embarrassed by it. Although, I mean, if you can imagine having a flashback in a busy restaurant or a busy flea market, people do tend to look at you as if, oh, wow, what happened to you? What the devil is wrong with you? Mm. People do tend to stay. Yeah.
So how can someone ground themselves when experiencing a flashback, since it seems like almost anything can trigger it? So how do we ground ourselves when we're now going through something like that?
Before I tell you the answer specifically, I quickly want to, if I have the time, to just mention how this works. As I mentioned, the brain sort of goes back to, and it goes into what we call an automatic thought or an automatic track. You can imagine a runaway train. So the brain basically says, okay, we're going back to this trauma experience that we had, and it just sort of goes. There's no there's not a whole lot of management to be done. So what we effectively want to do by grounding is to manually turn that train around, if I can use the expression.
Okay.
And one of the things that we need to understand about grounding is you need to do it as soon, or can I say rather as early as possible. So it is important to start knowing your triggers, to start for as much as you can.
Right.
And then basically what you're doing, because human beings cannot focus on more than one thing at a time, believe it or not. I know we all get told we multitask, but actually we don't. But anyway, because of that very reason, you can manually, cognitively say, I'm choosing to go the other way, but you have to do it as early as possible. No grounding will work, can I say, deep into a trigger, then you sort of, okay, the person has to ride it out.
Too late. Yeah.
A couple of things we can do. Yeah. What we can call the 5-4-3-2-1 technique is the moment you start feeling anxious, the moment you start getting sort of visual flashback or any kind of flashback, you literally say to yourself, I always tell my clients to literally say out loud, no. It's a kind of a shock to the brain.
Yeah.
And then you can do 5-4-3-2-1. 5 things I can see, 4 things I can touch, 3 things I can hear, 2 things you can smell, 1 thing I can taste. That literally, consciously takes the brain away from that trigger and focuses in on the see, the touch, the hear, the smell.
Okay.
Other things that work is standing up, stretching, walking around. I have, you can do something as basic as look around you and go, that tree is green, that cloud is white, that the sky is blue, the grass under me is green, that dog walking is black, etc., etc. You can literally do that. There's the exact same thing. It helps to sort of talk to yourself. And while we're mentioning that, folks, talking to yourself is not a sign of mental illness. It's not a sign of craziness. Yes, at this time we use the word crazy. We're trying to get rid of the stigma. Talking to yourself can be a good thing. We could talk about self-soothing. So you can say to yourself, I am safe right now. This is just a memory. I will be okay.
Mm-hmm.
Perhaps I know. You can repeat the date to yourself. You can say, today is the 11th. Today is the 11th. It's Friday.
Really?
It's April. Yeah, even that works. And then I always tell people, combine that with some breathing to breathe in through your nose. Maybe count to 3, count to 4, whatever you're comfortable with. And then breathe out through your mouth again for a count of 3 or 4. As I mentioned, you can look around and name things. And then some people do grounding, or let's say they name things and then they go, oh, no, this doesn't work. And that makes them panic even more.
Okay.
Sometimes you have to repeat it.
Okay.
Sometimes if naming things don't help, then do something, can I say, that's more engaging for the brain.
Mm-hmm.
Start counting backwards in increments of 7. I can't do that on the best of days, but yeah, that will engage your brain quite a lot. But try and say the alphabet backwards. Can you do that? that kind of thing, to really engage the brain so the brain doesn't have time or capacity to go back to the flashback.
Yeah, interesting.
So yeah, that's really interesting.
It sounds like basically just keeping your mind busy, giving your mind something else to do.
Exactly, yeah. Something I do want to add is we need to understand that although grounding is, it really is, and it's something we have to practice, but it really can be a really effective, brilliant tool. It's going to control the flashback, but it's not going to address the original problem. So that still needs to happen.
Okay, that's interesting. So you had said that you can't start once you're deep into whatever the anxiety that is caused by the PTSD or by the trigger, it's that point it's too late to start trying these techniques. When would you say would be a good time to start?
As soon as you find yourself sort of I smell something, it's reminding me of something. I hear something, it's reminding me of something.
Right.
The moment you realize, can I call it leaving the present?
Yeah.
In other words, as soon as humanly possible. I wanna maybe backtrack or it's not impossible, but it will be very difficult because now what the brain is trying to do is trying to manage. I'm in a alternate state, if I can call it that. And now I'm trying to, with that very same brain that's in an alternate state, I'm trying to manually override this flashback.
Right.
So you see how that can be. That's why I say when it's far down the line, then that becomes really difficult. Perhaps impossible.
More challenging.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Now, what strategies can help to prevent or reduce PTSD-related nightmares?
That's an interesting thing. And to be honest with you, we actually know very little about dreams and nightmares. But what has been proven effective is a good sleep routine. We talk about sleep hygiene.
Okay.
And that is little things. I always say 2 hours. Some people say 30 to 60 minutes. I say 2 hours before bed, no screens, zero screens whatsoever.
Okay.
2 hours before bedtime, start allowing your body, start training your body that it is okay to start, let me call it shutting down. It's okay to start calming down. It's okay to be okay. One of the things that you can do during that period is to write down any and all thoughts or concerns or worries that you might have, so that what you're doing there is basically tricking the brain into thinking that you're taking care of it. That sometimes helps.
Okay.
Calming activities before bed, warm bath, reading, soft music, maybe even a little bit of stretching, but like very basic stuff.
Mm-hmm.
There's something called imagery rehearsal therapy, rather, where if you have continuous nightmares, as you wake up from that nightmare, you have a pen and a paper next to your bed, and you sit and you write down the whole night. And then slowly but surely, as you do this, you start changing the end as you're writing it down. You start changing the storyline and the end of the nightmare. And so slowly but surely, the brain will start seeing the cognitive change as, can I call it, the real thing, and you'll start dreaming that instead of the terrible nightmare. So that works as well. It's kind of brain override, if you like. Breathing exercises, as always. There's a whole lot of guided imagery on the YouTube, someone takes you, say, walk through a forest walk, or walking to the beach, that helps a lot. That's actually really nice. There's music sounds on YouTube. I'm not selling YouTube. It's just where I found it. Where you find, sounds of the forest, sounds of the seas, bird sounds, just plain old white noise.
Yeah.
Believe it or not, but I like thunder and lightning. That helps me. That's actually very nice. So you can use stuff like that. You can actually ground yourself as you're falling asleep by saying, I'm okay, this is me, I'm lying in bed, sensory feeling, I'm feeling my bed under me, I'm feeling the blanket on top of me, my pillow is nice and soft. And you kind of just sort of make this little mantra over and over and over until you sort of fall asleep.
Mm-hmm.
And those actually work very well. But again, and today I'm going to be boring, but again, we need to go back and find the root. Again, we need to go and see someone that can help with this so that you can get to the origin of it and address it so that it can be gone.
Mm, very interesting. Very interesting. Now, can medication help to manage severe flashbacks and nightmares?
Yes, absolutely. It can. So, medications help reduce the intensity and the frequency of flashbacks often. It can even help with nightmares. It can actually, again, help the intensity and extension of the nightmares. I originally thought of talking about the different medications, but I thought it better to not do that. If you do, the listeners, if there's someone concerned about this, rather go see someone. And the easiest way is go to your GP, tell them you're not happy, and they can then refer you to a psychiatrist. Of course, you can always contact a psychiatrist directly if you were to do so, or if you were to like to do so. But so as I said, I'm not going to go through all the medications because I literally don't want people to go and, shall I say, start experimenting without without the help of a practitioner.
Yeah.
But they are there. And then, again, there are therapies, cognitive behavioral therapy, EMDR, which we mentioned on Wednesday. All of those can really help. But the long and the short of it, yes, absolutely, there are medications that can help. Some medications are just going to put the body into a state of ease and calmness so that the biological facets of the body can, you know, have a chance to sort of reset. As we've spoken about before, PTSD does cause a whole lot of stress on the body, and we've got muscle tension and all kinds of stuff, and people are in a sense of high alert. So the medication just gives that, and I call it a break. It sort of takes the edge off so that the therapy can start working, so that your grounding techniques, your breathing techniques, your sleep hygiene, so that all those things can start getting a foothold and you can, you know, sort of be on your way to recovery and getting rid of this stuff.
Right, right. And then how do loved ones be of help? How can loved ones assist when someone is having a flashback?
I would suggest, if at all possible, go and see if you can find a video of someone having a panic attack and or a flashback.
Okay.
And they don't always look the same. The reason for that is, if you see, I don't know if you've ever seen a panic attack or if anyone out there has seen a panic attack. It can be scary.
Yes.
And be absolutely non-responsive can also be scary. So to sort of get your own mind past what it looks like, because if you go into it cold, it can be quite daunting. Because one of the things that needs to happen if you're in the presence of someone who's having a flashback is you need to stay calm.
Mm-hmm.
You need to stay in the present. You basically then have to become that person's rationality. And if you freak out, then obviously all you'd have is two people having a bit of an attack or having a bit of a flashback, and that's no good. So you need to stay calm.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that is very important is do not touch that person. We want to care. We want to, and especially if they're crying, we want to give them tissues. Leave them be. You yourself can use grounding techniques for a loved one. And you can say to them, hey, look at the tree. What color is it? Hey, look at the clouds. What color is it?
Okay.
What's my name?
Okay.
Can you remember the color of my name? Nonsense. You're asking them absolute nonsense.
Yeah.
Why are you doing that? It's going to confuse the brain. And the brain then has to turn around and say, what does this person want?
Okay.
And then that we have the exact reasoning, as I explained before.
Yes.
The brain comes back and leaves the flashback.
Yeah.
Give them a bit of space. You know, don't crowd them. Don't ask them questions like, how are you feeling? What's happening? They can't answer you.
Okay.
There's too much happening to do that. You ask them silly little stupid if you do ask them questions. That's how we ground another person. And then again, afterwards, you can remind them, okay, let's breathe in and do it with them. People tend to mimic you if they're in a state. If you go, let's breathe in, they will do it with you eventually, even if you have to do it 3 or 4 or 5 times. They will eventually start doing it with you. And then you can start saying to them, okay, we're going to exhale. Remember, you're in a good place. Remember, I'm here for you. Okay, let's breathe in again. Don't forget, I'm here. You're safe. So you do exactly that. And all of that is just really, if we're being honest with each other, different ways of grounding. But as I say, one of two important things is don't touch, because if they're in a place where let's say something really bad happened to them, and it was a physical thing, and you touch them. Remember, they are there, back there, where that happened. So you touch them, they might react, which, you know, violently. Mm-hmm. And you need to stay alone if you're going to help them.
Got it. Got it. Very interesting. Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Sean. I think we can wrap it up there for today, and then we'll be connecting again on Monday to continue on with our lessons on PTSD. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Have a great weekend.
Thank you. Same to you.
You are tuned into Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media.